This episode is for those looking for an alternative partner-led sleep training method. My husband, Wes, and I are on this week discussing the way that we have gotten all four of our babies night-weaned and sleeping through the night. Now, it's not a super involved method, and it's certainly not rocket science, but we've had so many questions that we decided to make an episode that can be referred back to and shared easily. We discuss how we prepare ourselves and the child for this process, including some factors where you may not want to start the sleep training process just yet. And then we talk about the process itself and how there will be a crappy transitional time period, what Wes is actually doing and his tips and tricks, how I manage my milk supply issues, other stories, and more. So let's go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
True hydration comes from a mix of water and minerals, not water alone. And while we love to discuss the benefits of Redmond Relight powders for you parents in the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum times of your life, let's not forget about the kids. Redmond has launched their Relight Kids line of electrolyte powders, specifically with kids in mind. The mineral amounts and proportions are lessened to be more appropriate for children or for adults who want or need less sodium intake. They come in three fantastic flavors that my children love: pineapple, pink lemonade, and grape, and contain all the benefits of Redmond's honorable manufacturing and quality control practices. They contain the 60 plus trace minerals in just the salt portion alone, and we know how much metabolic support childhood demands, so support your kiddo in their sports and play recovery, growth, energy production, and more with Relight for Kids. You can use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off at redmond.life, and use the code to also enjoy the other Redmond products like their natural toothpastes, seasoning salts, bentonite clays for baths, and more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Okay, so we are here today to discuss the way that we have gone about night weaning or sleep training four of our kids, and it's really been led by you throughout this entire process. And I think a lot of people also do this, but nobody really talks about it. So, and I had spoken about it a lot on my Instagram when we were doing this with Sunday for the first time when she was 11 months. And then, you know, we did it again when she was like 14 months, and then we did it again, and we're about to do it again after she's not sick anymore. And the reason why I didn't really stick with her is just because of like teething and sickness, and that's a normal thing too. But I just really wanted to clarify really quick before we start. So we call it sleep training, but really what it is night weaning. And for us and our four kids and our experience, when we have decided to say no more to nursing at night, and you are the one going in to soothe them when they wake up instead of me going in to nurse them, that is when they sort of just drop these night wakings and they start to sleep through the night. So sometimes, yes, they are still going to wake up. But the goal after we do this, while we're doing it and afterwards, is that we don't go back to nursing them in the middle of the night, unless, like, you know, I don't know, it's an extenuating circumstance. But so we're just going to kind of talk and explain the way that we do it, because I know that a lot of people are wanting some kind of a lower crying option. Like, we do not believe in cry it out. We haven't had to get there to that point, you know? And so, yes, do our kids fuss a little bit? For sure. And we'll talk about this a bit, but it's mostly on you. And so I wanted to get you on here to talk about it from your perspective, from a man's perspective, because I think that that sort of blows a lot of people's minds too, when their partners are not necessarily willing to help in the middle of the night. And I understand that, but it's also like so much easier for somebody who doesn't have the boobs to go in and do it when you're trying to cut off the milk at night, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. So can you kind of explain the way that we do this, like outline it for everybody? We'll talk about it together.
So in my mind, as you just kind of articulated, there's a process to this, and it, you know, the timing of this, let's start right there. The timing of the training or the plan that you want to put in place, it can be augmented by a variety of different things. And you just kind of outlined how you know, this is like the third or fourth time that we're sleep training our youngest baby here. And that's because of various circumstances that, you know, we didn't foresee taking place, whether it was teething, whether it was sickness, whether it was a trip somewhere or something that just got her out of a rhythm. And that, first and foremost, is probably something that needs to be taken into account, but more than before anything. And you, more than me, have been very strategic about the scheduling of the train of this effort, let's call it. And from there, I always laugh when I first, when we first discussed this, I remember years and years ago with our first, that it was like, well, I'm going to need you to go in there and basically put this baby back to sleep. And I'm like, you want me to go in there? Like, you're the one with all the tools. You're the one with the knowledge here. What am I going to do in there? You know, like, that's really my first thought. And the more you kind of explain it, I was like, well, of course that makes sense, because a baby is used to those smells and that touch and there's just that feminine energy. And certainly, you know, from a feeding standpoint, that you're the one, you're the main player in that game, obviously. And so after, you know, I thought about it for a minute, I was like, well, yeah, that makes sense, because otherwise, and I've seen other people try this and do this and it, you know, with really with the mom as the lead, and it is a bear because of all those factors, because of the fact that the baby is like used to smelling you, seeing you, hearing you, touching you. And to the idea of sending you back in there to like shush them down, good luck, because they're like, they're equating that smell and touch and feel to you, like them being fed. So I would almost say from a mom's perspective, that's almost an impossible task. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And I think that it's something that would take so much longer if, you know, and in certain cases, that's the way that it has to be. Like, there is no partner, or the partner is working nights, or they really can't afford to not have a good week of sleep or something like that. But it does make things more complicated. So if in your situation, you guys have the luxury to, yes, sorry for you, it's going to suck for probably about a week, sometimes two, but then usually most children will adapt. Now, I want to say a couple of caveats. One, we do not co-sleep. So we do not have a baby in our bed for an extended period of time. I co-sleep with them when they're newborns for like a month or two, but then we put them into like their own bassinet. And by the time we're night weaning, which is usually around a year for us, or a little bit after, or a little bit before, in the case of Sunday, our fourth, they're well into their own room and in their crib. So for those that are co-sleeping, I am not your expert here about how to do this, because I don't know. I haven't done it myself. So sorry, you're gonna have to search out for another resource on that. But for those that have babies in cribs, this is a potential that it will work for you. But now also the second caveat I want to say is that we did try to do this with our third daughter, and she really taught us a lesson that every baby is different and every child has their own different temperament. And what I mean by that is that you may have it in your mind that you're going to go in with a plan and do something, and sometimes they just won't kind of mesh with your plans. And we tried really hard with her a couple of different times, and it was so clear within that first night that it was gonna, the amount of crying was not gonna be something that either of us were willing to take on, even though my sleep deprivation was so bad and I was in such a bad place. I literally mentally couldn't handle. You probably could have. You were like ready, because you saw how badly I was suffering too, and you were ready to just like duke it out and be up with her like all night long, even though she was like screaming in your arms. Like, here's the thing, is like, it's not like we were listening to her scream cry in her crib alone. It was like you were trying to comfort her and hold her, and she was just not having it. Now, all of our kids will protest, and this is a word that we hear in the sleep training world a lot, like protesting the new change. So this is like a transition that all children usually are going to have to an extent where, yeah, they're still going to be crying in dad's arms or in partner's arms, whatever, or like as they're being pat down, just because simply it's different. It's a different thing. It's not what they're used to. It's not what they want. They want to nurse or suckle or whatever. And if, you know, they take pacifiers, cool, great. But a lot of our kids didn't at this point. So it was really just me, and they didn't really have any of those other tools. So we were sort of like accelerating their, we were forcing them into this new way of it being. And it was like, we're not leaving you alone. Dad's in there with you. He's comforting you. He's still staying nearby, checking on you. We will let them go up to a 5-minute ish marker of fussing and crying. But we also know our kids and we know their type of cry. Like if it's a fuss for 5 minutes, that's different than that type of accelerating cry where you know that they're like not going to calm down. They are absolutely wigging out. And then we don't make them wait 5 minutes doing that. We will go in and be like, hey, it's okay, you know, and it's a whole game and every kid is different. So I just wanted to outline that too, that like sometimes you may go into this and it really just isn't working and you'll know pretty quickly if it's not going to work. And maybe you just have to unfortunately wait a couple more months until your child is ready. Because then at 14 months, when we did it with her again, it was still hard, but it was different. Like we could tell, I mean, it was harder for you than it was for me, obviously, but I feel like the progression was more normal, that we knew she was going to start to get it. And as a couple, you and I had decided, well, 14 months of feeding her 5, 6, 7 times a night, I felt in myself like I knew I had reached a point where I literally cannot go on anymore. And I felt like for her, yes, she's still a baby. 14-month-olds are not older children, but I was like, it's, you're okay. And it's time for me to put myself first. So there's always going to be a little bit of a threshold there too with each child. Like with Sunday, we felt like she was ready at 11 months, which is the youngest of any of our kids that we've really felt that way. And so anyway, I just wanted to say those two things because go ahead.
You articulated exactly what we kind of discussed at the very beginning. Like it's not going to be, you said it right away, it's not going to be the same for each of your kids and the timing of it, when you start this process, however that shakes out. And even like the amount of times you're up in the night in advance of sleep training, and I remember in our first kid, it was like, you know, your standard, maybe 2 times a night. And then, you know, you just said in our third kid, you were up 7 times a night and this went on and on. And then it was really, and I will say this to parents, like when you're in that space, when you're in that timeline, you're doing whatever it takes to kind of get yourself some sleep. And so, yeah, in this situation with our third kid, you were up 5, 6 times a night feeding her and just trying to get her back to sleep. And what happened was, is that we developed a pattern for that baby to believe that at any moment, if they wanted to be fed, they could get it. And there's different ways of mitigating that and analyzing and just like evaluating a different approach. But like, that's what happened. And it happens kind of like organically. You're like, you know, oh, this baby's up 3 times a night. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, it's like, oh, this baby's up, you know, and then she woke up 4 times and then it kind of turns into 4 times. And then all of a sudden you're like, you're down the road with it. You're just trying to get sleep. And you know, you still need to sleep, feed the baby. And in her case, she would only take like small amounts of milk, you know? And so it was like, she kind of needed those extra feeds just to kind of like get the amount that she really needed. She was like short dosing herself, if you will. And so it took multiple efforts to get her truly fed. And that is, you know, again, every child is its own game and its own story. So just to kind of give a quick breakdown as to like what our method looked like and how, and I would say we've been very successful with this. When we tried to implement it, obviously with Sunday, it's been a couple times, but that was kind of out of our control with her. But when we've done it, even with her, she kind of started sleeping through the night fairly quickly.
Okay. But wait, before you outline it though, I just want to say two things. So one, just to make it really clear, cause you've touched on this a little bit, but if you are thinking about this, some factors that are external outside of your control that you would want to make sure are not happening for your baby before you decide to do this would be that they are not actively in the middle of teething, they're not sick, and that you are not planning a trip to be like going out of town with them anytime in the next like probably month or so, maybe even longer, so that this new pattern can take root and take hold. So is there any other factors you can think of? I mean, maybe,
no.
Oh, maybe like that they're not going through a developmental leap. So if you don't know what I'm talking about with that, a leap is something that you can learn about through the app that's called the Wonder Weeks app. And I'll put that in the show notes here. But these kinds of situations of our children can feel like they're incessant. They're almost like overlapping. They're always happening. And that's one of the reasons why sleep training can be really tricky, because it's like, oh my God, when am I ever going to do this? But your success will be way better if you can catch your child in a time period where they're not going to be in acute pain, or they're not sick, or you know what I mean? All these things, like it makes sense, but I just want to call it out because it is really important. And sometimes we've decided we were going to try something and then we've had to be delayed, like, a lot of times. Second thing, before you start the method, is the very first step, I think, besides you and your partner talking about how you're going to do it, or something that we have done that maybe you were going to say, sorry if you were, but I just want to make sure that we say it, is that we tell the kid. We tell the kid what's happening, and we're like, and it might feel silly because you're looking at around a 1-year-old or however old your child is when you're doing this, and you're telling them, but they know exactly what you're saying, and they may not act like it, but they really, really do. And so we'll say something like, hey, pretty soon, we maybe not give like a time, but like pretty soon, you're not going to have milk at night anymore. It's just daddy's going to come in and he's going to put you to bed. So when you wake up in the night, we really want you to roll over and just go back to sleep. We're not going to have milk anymore. And then, as the days get closer and closer to the actual moment that we start, we're telling them like in 2 days, oh, tomorrow's your last time milking. Okay. Tonight is the last time you're getting milk in the middle of the night. Then when you wake up in the night, daddy's going to help you, but mommy's not going to see you until the morning time or whatever. You know what I mean? Right. But you're really prepping them. I do think it helps so much, so much.
Yeah. Now I think one other component there is when we have kind of quote unquote planned this out as far as the schedule, I distinctly remember multiple times with different kids where you're like, all right, we're going to sleep train. And then you pull out your phone and look at the monthly calendar and you're like, well, we can't do it here because we're going to be going on a trip in 2 weeks, or so-and-so is getting married and we have to go to that wedding, or, some other variables taking place. And then you're like, oh, and then there's going to be a leap right after that, according to the timeline of the growth app or what have you. And so it's like, I remember scenarios where you're like, if we don't start it right now, we have to wait until X, or if we don't start it, in 3 weeks, then it's going to be another 2 months before we have a window where we have that amount of time. And so it's like, don't think that once you make this decision, like, okay, we're going to start this week, it's like, that might not be the case. So just be prepared to evaluate your calendar and see where we're at, what's going on, who's going to be where, how the calendar shakes, and who's available at what time. I mean, because I go out of town for work, or I'm not available at night, or I'm somewhere else. And it's just like, well, if I'm not here, then heck, you can't do it. And, so those are just variables to think about, because those are like, I laughed the first time, the first couple times that we decided to do this. And I'm like, okay, so it's either next week or in 4 months, or whatever. It's like so ridiculous, but it's so true, because it's like, you got to have that 3 week stretch where it's like consistent. And I'm not saying you're going to be going in there every night for 3 weeks, but what I'm saying is that in the event that circumstances and the baby wakes up, you want to be there to land that plane. And you got to plan that accordingly. So
yeah, because you don't want it to be where like the baby's 90% used to this, and then they have like a couple of nights of a hiccup for some reason of whatever, and then you're out of town or you're unavailable, and I go in now, and they haven't seen me in the middle of the night in 3 weeks, and I'm battling them, and then you know how it goes, like in my mind, and I'm sleepy and I'm tired and I just want to go back to sleep, and I know what would help. I know what to do to get the kid back to sleep is just nurse them. And it's like, but I can't. Like, I'm trying to train my body to stop making milk at night. I'm trying to train this baby to feed more in the daytime and not at night, all these different things. But it is just this like back and forth thing. So, okay, let's go ahead and start talking about the way that we do it. Basically, after we have decided on a window of time that seems like the best option for our kid and our life is, and then we prep the kid as we're going. We're like, all right, here we go. And I mean, then it's literally, so for some women, your breasts will adjust just fine. Or maybe some women are really used to pumping and they'll just decide to cold turkey, no more milk at night, and they'll pump, or they won't do anything and their breasts are fine. I am somebody who's extremely prone to mastitis. So something has to happen to my breasts, and I hate pumping and I don't really respond to a pump anymore. So what I do, maybe the sleep trainers would say that this is not the best thing in the whole world. I don't really care, because it works for us. It works for our kids. And in my mind, the kid is so used to, like, before we did this with Sunday, she was feeding like 4 times a night. So that's quite a lot of milk that she is used to at night. And so it doesn't shock me, the idea that she could actually be hungry or thirsty or something, given that volume. So what I do is I will pick a time like say it's 2 a.m., maybe I do it even twice. Maybe I dream feed the kid, meaning like, you know, at 10 o'clock at night when we're going to bed, I go in and I get them from sleep and I try to keep them asleep and I latch them on and they'll have a feed while they're essentially sleeping. Like they rouse a little bit, but like whatever. I don't think they remember that that's what's happening. Then I'll set my alarm for like 2 a.m. and I will get up and go again and dream feed the baby. But any other time that that baby wakes up, it's you. And so then for me on my side of my, the way that my breasts will go, like I will do that pattern, just get them on twice a night for like a week. And then I get them on once a night for like a week. And then I go no milk, you know, but I have to go very slow for my own body. But also I just think for the kids, sometimes they're taking in so much that we need to like make it a little bit slower. You could, if you don't want to do that, some people don't, and they'll like offer a cup of milk in the night or depending on the age of the kid, like something if they think they're actually hungry or actually thirsty. And I do remember we did that with our son. We offered him like raw goat milk or something for a couple of nights and he wanted nothing to do with it. He was right. Like so pissed and he was like, this is not what I want. And so then I think when he really finally started to understand like, wait, for real, this is like my new replacement of what I'm going to get in the night. Like, okay, fine. And then, but he was a very good sleeper anyway. So then he just started to sleep through the night. But okay. So tell us what you do when the baby wakes up and it's like 12:30 and you hear that them crying, what is it that right. you are doing and how do you wrap your mind around going into this whole thing anyways, like staring the belly of the beast down, you know?
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Sleep is so important. However, it can be hard to get good sleep, especially if you are stressed, trying to conceive, pregnant, or postpartum. This is why we love Needed's stress and relaxation support product. There are very few safe sleep supportive options for women in these seasons. And this blend is amazing because it contains three forms of magnesium, L-theanine, L-glycine, and chamomile. Just one scoop has 320 milligrams of magnesium, which is key because so many of us are deficient in this key mineral that helps with sleep and stress. The best part is it's in a powder, so you can easily mix it in with water or your favorite beverage, and it has a lovely mild flavor, which is delicious to drink alone, or you can blend it with their hydration support or immune powder, which is what I often do. Get some yourself by visiting thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show.
So I would just say the first thing that you need to be prepared for is your mindset. Just know going in that this could be a real test, okay? And that it's going to be a bit of a challenge because you're ripping a Band-Aid off, so to speak. And so if you go in thinking, oh, well, I'm just going to pop in there and the baby's going to go right back to bed and it's no problem and I can go back to sleep, that might not be the case. And in fact, I would almost venture to say it's not going to be. So if you're part of the process here and this is your plan, you need to be prepared that like, let's just put it this way. You just watched your partner not sleep during the night, you know, having broken sleep for a year, feeding the baby, all that, you know, like for months and months and months. And you slept most of the time, I would assume. Now it's your turn to repay them for like a week. So just wrap your, and granted, it might not be fun, but it's part of the process. So just know that like, that's part of the game. So what I'll do is the baby starts crying. I'll go in there and I basically, the first time I go in there, I don't say anything and I'll just try and like reset the baby and try and kind of like pat them down a little bit, pat their back, maybe rub their back or whatever. Most of the time when it's like the first night, they are not having it. They're not happy about it. They're like, what's going on? Where's mom? I don't dig this, you know? So they're basically like, they're pushing back pretty hard. And so I only stay in there for like 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. And then I leave. And then usually I don't even go back to the bed. I'll just stand outside the door because the baby's usually crying at this point. And so I'll sit there and kind of just wait. I'll wait a minute and maybe 2 minutes and I'll go back in and kind of just do the same thing. Just get them in their regular sleeping position, try and soothe them a little bit. Again, not a lot of verbal activity. Just trying to kind of put them back in. And for me, I personally had a wide range of different tactics that I used, from like petting them on the back kind of quickly. I would try all sorts of stuff. And now I have my different patterns, but like, you know, rubbing their back, patting them in the butt, holding down their, like the top of their back while patting their butt, so that like they're not, cause they're going to arch back. Like they're going to push off.
Because this is, well, hold on. Our kids sleep on their bellies. So I just want to clarify why you're saying patting them on their back. That's why.
Okay. So, and there's going to be other, you could probably look this up on the line, but there's going to be other recipes, if you will, or patterns that you can use for different positions for the baby during the sleep training. I know ones where they sleep on their stomach. They're a year old, so it's just kind of like, you know, that's part of the course. So then I'll leave. Usually when I leave, they're still not happy. Like they're going to be upset, like probably this whole time. And in various situations, we've had you sleep in a different room, so that you can actually start to get that real sleep. If you've kind of wed down so that your breast activity is kind of where you want, you don't necessarily need to feed, or you have like a 3 a.m. feed or something one time a night where you ghost feed them, great. But I wanted you at that moment, because of like the lack of sleep, to get as much as you could. So like I didn't feel bad that this baby was awake keeping you up, because I assumed that you were sleeping and that you were in a different room. And if I had a major emergency, I'd come get you. But I would just let that baby kind of do its thing. I'd leave, and then I'd wait 5 minutes. And that baby's probably going to be crying, not hysterically, but just like frustrated level of a cry, where they're just like, they're not happy because their pattern's being broken, you know, and they're not getting exactly what they want immediately. So then I'd go back in, and I would start to like, I would implement a little bit of conversation, not conversation. I mean, this baby's not talking back to me, but I would say, okay, hey, it's okay. You're okay. And what I would say is like, you're safe. Dad's here. You're okay. It's time for, you know, and then sometimes, you know, depending on the day or whatever, I'd say there's no more milk. It's time for sleep. Go back. It's time for snoozes. And, you know, pick the same phrase that you use repeatedly night after night, because then they'll get used to like, all right, go back to sleep basically means like it's time for me to like, I'm not getting what I want. And so I'm going to stop fighting. So I'd do the 5 minute, and then I'd go in. I'm only in there for a window of time. I'm not trying to pat this baby to sleep. I'm not trying to like pick this baby up even. Sometimes if they're getting so frustrated and upset, I would pick them up and just kind of rock them a little bit and just kind of like, and they'll be like pushing back on me and all that, but you gotta like hold your ground and almost take like your, cause you'll be a little frustrated. And I want dads to know that like, there's going to be a level of frustration that you're going to have. Cause you're going to be like, dude, come on, like, let's go. Like I've been in here 5 times. Like what's going on? But just know that, like, again, it's the mindset. If you know that you're going to be in that space doing that thing, just commit to it and just be past it. Be past the frustration. Be past the concern. You're just going to do what you got to do. So from there, I would say, hey, you know, if the baby's standing up in its crib, I would pick it up, pat him on the back, rock him, twist him, turn him, you know, do the thing. And then, you know, and whisper to him, hey, it's okay. But I'd only be in there for a minute. Like I'm only in there for a period of time where I can soothe them the best that I can in that window, and then put them back to sleep and then lay them back down. And a lot of times I'm going to lay them down, and the minute they're going to try and climb up your arm to try and get back to you or out of the crib or what have you, put them back down and leave the room. And then I'd wait 8 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever that window. I want to kind of start small and start stretching that time out, because over time, after like, especially the first night's going to be rough. Okay. So expect that. It's not going to be ideal. It's not going to be like a super easy process. It might happen multiple times in that first night where you go in there a couple of times. Let's say you go in there 5-6 times and it takes you an hour. Cause that's not unheard of for it to take that long, especially the first night. And then you might go back to your room. You think, okay, I got this baby asleep. And then in an hour, that baby wakes up again. And then you do the same thing. You start from the beginning. You start, you know, 1 minute or 30 seconds, and then kind of stretch it to 4 or 5 minutes, and then you stretch it to 8 or 7 or 8, 9, 10 minutes, and then you know ideally you get that baby down, and then you leave. That baby might wake up in 15 minutes. I mean, just be prepared for any type of activity, because it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to immediately go back to sleep and stay asleep for the rest of the night.
Yeah. And I thank you for outlining that. I think it almost might be, it might seem like there's been no change or improvement for maybe 2 or 3 nights. The first couple nights where you're just like, this baby is still doing the exact same thing. In our experience, I can't speak for all children, all babies, obviously, or all families, but in our experience, it's kind of classic for it to be bad for a couple of, especially the first night, but then even like nights 2 and 3, in the sleep training stuff that I hear about and read about, often it's like, oh, it's just within 3 nights, they're sleeping through the night. I'm like, I don't know. That's not been the case for us. It almost feels like no change. And then all of a sudden there's like a great improvement. So you sort of have to just sort of push through that. But one thing I also want to say is that you do sometimes, and I feel like in those first couple days of doing this, when we really just need the baby to go back to sleep and have that experience of falling back asleep on their own without being nursed, you will sometimes, after having this like battle, say it's been like an hour and the kid is like really tired and they're almost falling asleep on their own, but they're just not quite there. A tool that you use that I have tried 100 million times and does not ever work for me. I don't know if it's because it's me or if it's the way you do it, but you will sometimes like pat the baby on their butt again, because our baby can sleep on their bellies, like all the way completely asleep. And I think that it's okay for us to have in our mind that like, we may need to do that. We may need to actually like get the baby completely asleep with our help in this initial transition when they're not getting their like normal comforts. It's like, okay, well now you're going to be completely comforted by dad. And then we can kind of then at some point have to transition out of that. Or like, you know, say they get so used to you for 4 or 5 nights, they get so used to you patting them completely back to sleep. Then you'll start to do that a little bit less and less and less. And again, it's different each time. It's different each kid, like whatever. But I just wanted to say that because it is something where like that the partner or the non-breastfeeding like person, or even if you are breastfeeding and you're the mom and you have to do this by yourself for some reason, you can do that where you're getting them to sleep, like by completely rocking them or completely soothing them in some other way that's not the boob. Or if it's, you're taking away the pacifier. I mean, you could extrapolate out this method to many different things, but I just wanted to say that because we do use that sometimes where you'll completely, you'll be in there for 25 minutes and I'm like, what are you doing? But you've been getting her completely to sleep. And then, you know, and that's an important step that has to happen sometimes.
Yeah. And I would say that typically occurs after many, many times in, and the baby is reaching a fatigue level where they're like, they're having a hard time going to sleep because they are so tired. And it's almost like they're cranky. You know, like when a kid gets cranky and tired, it's like, okay, I want to get them to sleep, you know, in your normal setting. But this is kind of that window when they're actually asleep and they wake up in the night. I would not advise that or do that in my first 3 or 4 or 5 visits into the room. This is something that after a while, and not because you're like, obviously you want to go back to sleep or like be done with this process, but if you do this step one, you're going to lead yourself down a path that's not great, because then they're going to get used to that. And then you're going to be in there for forever trying to get the baby to sleep. And the other part that I would suggest is if you do have the ability to like assist them, don't do it till they're like half asleep and then try and leave the room, because they're going to wake up. And then when they wake up and they start crying hard again, it's almost like you're starting over. So it has to be picked. You have to pick your spots with this and really try and massage it in to the process later in the game, and then get them completely asleep. Don't like get them to the point where they've like been asleep for 10 seconds and you're going to walk out. It's like, they're going to wake up. So get them to the point where they're like passed out, out. And then odds are this is probably one of the first couple nights, so they're going to wake back up in 40 minutes or so, but just be prepared for that. So the other part that I want to mention is I always like when we decide to do this, I'm always kind of like, all right, here we go. You know, like, you know, as anybody would, Because it's not a super easy task. That's why there's a million, you know, remedies and resources for it. It's always easier than I think it will be. And, you know, yeah, well, from a time perspective, like after the first night or two, that third night, you can kind of start to figure out what that baby will take, what that baby will like, adhere to, or what it likes, or what have you. And you can kind of almost kind of play to those patterns. And then it really only takes like it for us. It really only took like 4 nights, 5 nights, like our youngest baby that we're doing this with now. I thought it was going to be an absolute bear, and it took like 4 nights, and then she was good. And then she didn't wake up, and we had that going for a week or two. And then all of a sudden she got sick and had some other circumstances to come up, and she was starting to wake up, and it was just like something completely different took her out of that pattern. But my point is, it's not going to be forever. We're talking less than a week, ideally. Certainly, I would say near a 5 day window. In the grand scheme of things, it's a short-term struggle for, you know, a long-term benefit. And I guess what I'm saying to the dads out there, as I give you a quick shout out, it's not as bad or lengthy as you might anticipate. Like, it sounds like a monumental task, but really after a couple of nights, it kind of eases itself out and you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. And it's really, really, really worth it to get that sleep. So one other thing I just wanted to add was, I think you just do this by default, and it's something that we've learned to do, or I at least have sort of just learned is an important part of all boundary setting with parenting. And this is no different, in that you're deciding, okay, the way that it was happening is no longer working. We're going to move forward with a new plan. So child, you're no longer having milk at night because, you know, for whatever reason, is to go into it as the parent, both of you as a team, with a very confident, grounded energy about yourselves. So that I really think that children pick up on that. You know, when we are very nervous, we're very like sure of ourselves that it's going to fail. I think that they know that, you know, they can pick up on it in the tone of our voice or just our little bit of a hesitancy or whatever it is. But if we are really, really, really set, like, I hear you. I you know, and we're validating their emotions. I know, I hear you. It's okay. I love you. You're safe. I'm here with you. I know that whatever, you know, we're talking to them the way that we are, or when we're prepping them ahead of time and we're just saying, yo, this is like the new path forward. And going into that room, having just this, like, take a second, take a breath outside the baby's room, ground yourself. You are the leader of the family, and your confidence is something that will help with quelling the whole situation. And so that could just be an added step.
And to jump on top of that, I think that what I said really kind of at the beginning of this podcast was really commit to this. Like, this is a short window of time. And if you're really all in and just really kind of dive into this, knowing that it's not going to be forever, it's certainly not going to be 12 months or however long your wife or partner has been dealing with this, not sleeping at night and so forth, just commit to it. And it's not going to be as bad as you think. Like, the first night's rough, the second night's not as bad, and then it tapers from there. So it's not like just, if to your point, if you commit to the idea and go in with the positive attitude, I think that, you know, that's where you're going to find success.
Yes. Okay. So thank you for recording this with me. We just wanted to have an easy place to have this as a resource that you can share or you can look back on. And, you know, it's just what's worked for us. And in posting about our methods, I've heard from many other families that that's how they do it too. I think that it's very, very effective with a baby that loves to drink milk at night to have somebody who doesn't make milk come in and help support them, especially when you're of the mindset that you don't want your baby to be crying a lot. It really comforts me in knowing that even though I can, you know, if I'm hearing that they're upset, or just the idea of hearing you tell me in the morning that they've been upset, but I know that you were there with them. They were not alone.
You're not on the back end between partners. You're not, you know, especially as the moms, just know in your heart, you're not abandoning your baby. Like it's in your baby's in good hands. Your baby's going to go through a rough like night or two, maybe three, but really they'll smooth themselves out and it's your partner's turn to kind of like turn the page and help your baby through that time period. So,
yes, exactly.
You know, we're not just isolating them alone in a room pitch black by themselves for days on end. It's really a supported effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because I have to say it, it's not like it only took us three nights. Maybe it only took like three nights of really hard, but you know, it took maybe like a week.
It's a week, but it tapers, you know, yeah, aggressively. So like, you know, your first night as the guy in this case that's doing this or the partner, it's one night that's really rough. The next night's still not great. And then it tapers pretty aggressively, like pretty quickly from there. And so, you know, it might take a week total, but really after day five, you're in pretty good form.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. All right. Thanks, babe. Love you.
Thank you. Bye.
There is a lot of education out there for pregnancy and birth, and thank goodness for it. But what about postpartum? Many parents feel blindsided by how dynamic and intense the first few weeks with a newborn can be, and I've created a course to change that. Introducing the Immediate Postpartum Series. In this 11-video course, I teach you and your partner about all of the different types of decisions that need to be made right after your baby is born, the ways that your body and your baby's body will be changing rapidly over those first several days and weeks, how to recover from birth, whether it's a vaginal or cesarean delivery, how to establish breastfeeding, it's basically a breastfeeding 101 course, and the nuances of stool changes, diaper tricks, newborn sleep, placenta options, mindset, circumcision, and more, so that you and your partner know what to expect and can feel prepared and confident in what is normal and what is not, and get back to enjoying your new baby. Click the link in the show notes to start prepping now. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now and it starts with you.